podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Manchester United Redcast, where we're here to discuss all things about the greatest club in the world. And joining me today are Ben Paul.
Hello.
And the so we've just recently discovered the Junior Pianist of the Year, 1979, Chris Curley.
Can I say I was only three, and what an achievement that was. Just after my Pontins under 12 pool championship of 1986 when I was age 10.
Gary Barlow can sleep soundly knowing that you gave up your career on the keyboards at that age, Chris.
I can give you a little bit of Gary Barlow TV insider knowledge, if you like, Dan.
I'm always up for that.
Well, the Channel 4 show, Star Stories, which was on in like the late noughties, they did an episode purely on Gary Barlow, and my friend Lee wrote it. And Lee and I were in the pub, and he said, "Listen, I need to tell you something." I said, "What?" I said, "Well, I've based Gary Barlow on you." I went, "What? What have you done? What? What do you mean? What do you mean? What have you done? Why have you done that?" He says, well, I just have. Well, how? How? I said, "I can't tell you." "What do you mean you can't tell me? You've got to tell me. I'll tell you when it goes out." I went, "Okay." So it went out on Channel 4 on a Friday night. 3 million people watched it. And I rang him up and I said, "I know exactly why you've based Gary Barlow on me." He goes, "Yeah, go on then. What is it?" I went, "It's Gary Barlow's self-righteous indignation about being right all the time." He went, "Spot on. It's exactly that." So when Barlow is in the episode going, "I told you, lads, I told you we'd come back. Howard, I told you. You didn't believe me, but now you do, don't you?" That's kind of my life with Lee, was pretty much that. And Ben would probably back that up over the last few
years. So, well, as far as your righteous indignation goes, do you think we're going to bounce back this time? And you're going to tell us that you were right all along about Ollie being solid manager and United hitting possibly Europe, maybe runners-up spot?
Well, I'm still Ollie in, right? And I have to say that I've enjoyed the last 2 weeks. I mean, they were a great 2 weeks of fun competing for the title. This past week has been awful, yet if you want to think about it a little bit more, it's actually maybe not that surprising. And I go back to, like, on the game on Saturday against Arsenal, it was pretty much the same team that played last year, apart from a legendary 34-year-old striker we got on a free transfer in the last week of the window. So, has, you know, the Glazers didn't get the players Ollie needs. We've said that all along. In games like Sheffield United and Arsenal, maybe that came home to roost a bit, that we didn't have the centre-back that we want for certain situations, and we didn't have the right winger, the professional right winger, to create some more chances that we need and that Ollie wanted in the summer and never got. So, and the people he did buy, well, one was on the bench and made Luke Shaw play well. One, Ollie just can't pick or doesn't pick in Van der Beek. And we picked two kids, one of which has gone back on loan to a Spanish club this week. So, you know, it's surprising because of how good we were doing, but not surprising in other ways.
Ben, did you think that the Sheffield United game would pose as many problems as it did for us?
So if anybody listened to last week's podcast and re-listened to it afterwards, they'd see me making a complete dick of myself, because I was convinced this one was going to be the catch up for the goal difference that we desperately needed to catch up on. I predicted a 3 or 4 nil win. I did underestimate Sheffield United. They're solid defensively. They've had a run of good form defensively. They were stubborn against City yesterday. I didn't expect us to lose, I've got to be honest. And again, mistakes, stupid mistakes, and not taking our chances were at fault. I don't want to pick out any individuals, but
Ben, I wouldn't beat yourself up about underestimating them, because it seemed like 11 United players did as well. On the pitch. You know, Sheffield United have hardly got beaten by many goals. It's always been by the odd goal most of the season. But there was a clear, massive lack of intensity by the United lads last week. And they just turned up, it would be enough. you know, reveling in the glory and the efforts of what they did on Sunday against Liverpool. And the Premier League has got a nasty habit of biting you on the backside if you behave like that.
I think I think Chris, that we sometimes you get to play a team who are coming out of a bad spell of form at the wrong time. And I think there was an element of that with Sheffield United. They looked like a team that had kind of found something a little bit. And I think it was almost like a coming together, the perfect storm for that to be the kind of game where we slip up in a way, because we've been winning games by, you know, the odd goal and not really putting teams away.
I mean, we got back into it, didn't we, with Slabhead's header. And you think, OK, we can go on to win it. And then possibly conceded one of the worst goals I've ever seen, which says a lot when you take into the account the goal we conceded in Turkey early this year. It was worse than that one.
It's up there with the Turkish one, isn't it?
I mean, Martial loses the ball on the halfway line. Bad pass by Matic, gave him no chance because he made a run ahead of him, couldn't do much. But physically, Martial didn't stick his backside into the centre-half, got easily robbed. He went down the wing. Martial jogs back after him, doesn't really sprint to get it. On the right-hand side, Rashford does a bit of pointing, sends Maguire the wrong way, then doesn't follow Baldock. Then the ball comes across and Telles is standing off and not pressing the ball. Rubbish block. De Gea didn't clear it. If we remember that time into the stand, he played a 10-yard pass. I mean, half the team made some elementary errors. And you can't, you know, I'm not going to blame Tu and Zabe for blocking it in a deflection, because all the other stuff happened. Like, it was the last 5 minutes on a five-a-side pitch and you knew your time was up. And that was kind of the defending. And they let him shoot and we were scuppered. It was just a horrendous, awful, lazy goal to concede by half the team. And if you notice on the replay, you'll see Bruno Fernandes is the only one who sprints back and tries to pressure the ball. And he just doesn't quite get there in time. And he nearly did.
Yeah, really would have been back there.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen Martial kind of come into form and kind of go out of form. Do we think this could be the season that maybe Ollie loses patience with him?
I would have thought he would have lost his patience already. We talked about it during the game on our WhatsApp thread. I was surprised, disappointed that when McTominay came off, that he didn't shift Rashford over to the left and bring on Greenwood on the right. Because Rashford was playing out of position again, had a disappointing game. He's much better on the left than Martial. And I can't believe it. After that performance against Sheffield United, I was surprised and disappointed that
Martial was centre-forward, wasn't he, against Sheffield United? And physically, he makes it so easy for the defenders, because he doesn't physically challenge them. And someone like Jagielka had him in his pocket. You know, he looks easily bullied. If I was a centre-half, I'd feel pretty confident marking him, because I know if I give this lad a kick early doors or get right up his backside, he's not going to challenge me in that way. All I've got to do is stop him from turning and running at me. And that's it. And I just think his inconsistency is a massive issue. When he's still playing like he's 19 years old, and he's been in the first team now 6 years, and I don't see much difference or progression for that time in terms of his consistency. He's got all the ability in the world, but to be a top player at a top club, you've got to be 7-8 out of 10 every week, really, and he's not.
Yeah, he doesn't. I don't think he's ever going to be that. The number nine, as it were, that, say, in the way Cavani plays that sort of number nine position and sort of spearheads it and really kind of takes that air of the pitch and makes it his own, doesn't he? He sort of, you know, he's a presence in the same way that Zlatan was, you know, that he dominates that area of the pitch, and Martial sort of flits in and out too much for me. And
he totally drifts. And, you know, last year he got 20 goals and was fantastic, but he scored two. You know, we're missing, well, this time last year he'd probably have about 10 goals. So we're missing 10 goals from that team. Well, that could be like 6 points. you know, and it's like, you know, that's a big problem. That is a big, big worry going into the second half of the season, that where are the goals coming from? We're missing goals we had last year that we haven't got this year, and who's going to get them and how we're going to get them. That was a worry for me after Sheffield United, but became more of a worry after Arsenal, because Ollie rightly dropped him and then brought him on, and he did nothing. He did nothing for 60 minutes, Martial. He was no real threat for me. And that's frustrating, because I'm a massive fan of his, because of the ability he's got when you see it. You just don't see it often enough. And you've got to at that level. And that's what Man United need.
Ben, were you surprised at the lack of goal action in the Arsenal game?
Yeah, I was, because we have been a threat going forward. I felt we started off too defensively. I don't like it when we play with two defensive central defensive midfielders. I don't like it when the McTominay and Fred, against an Arsenal that were there for the taking, could do the job. One person, one player should really do that job. And Pogba should have slotted in next to him with Rashford out on the left and Greenwood on the right. That, for me, is an attacking threat. That shows intent. I don't think we had that intent. And because of that, I don't think we were the goal threat that we should have been. I mean, they were there for the taking. Their biggest creatives, and they play on the front foot, Arsenal, their biggest creatives, Tierney and Bakker, and Aubameyang, who, you know, does get a decent amount of goals, they were all missing. Arsenal were there for the taking. And we were too defensive. It's almost like Ollie's got a bit of block against the top six, maybe still a hangover from the 6-1 defeat against Tottenham. It's almost like he's still too scared of losing that he doesn't go full pelt on the attack.
But I think I kind of agree with you, and then I kind of disagree with you, because I think, you know, Fred and McTominay, excuse me, when they're together in midfield, give Ollie a defensive base. And probably after Sheffield United, he kind of wanted that because that's what he trusts, because of the inconsistencies of the rest of them. Yet Fred and McTominay are pretty reliable when they play together. My problem on Saturday against Arsenal was that I thought the intensity was better than Sheffield United. But what we desperately lacked, and it goes to Ben's point about players playing out of position and having to put Rashford right and Pogba left and what have you, is that there was just a lack of quality in the final third. Like a top quality that you need to take the chances in those kind of games. And, you know, Cavani missed two chances. Bruno was through and made a half chance into a real chance and put it wide. Rashford had a chance at the far post in the first half and dallied with his feet. There was just some indecision in the final third and lack of clinical quality that meant that those chances we did create, four or five, we didn't take. And that's a worry, because we keep seeing that. We keep seeing these habits that these players have got keep turning up at the completely wrong time.
We're going to just take a short break now, but we'll be back with more from the People's Pundit and two Christian named Ben Paul right after this break.
If you want an e-bike that doesn't look like it's made for the shopping precinct, something that's less Mr. Bean and more Steve McQueen, check out the range of bikes from London-based Cooler King. From dope 250-watt city bikes to Harley Bobber-inspired 750-watt beasts that can tear your face off while leaving your smile intact. Cooler Kings are made in limited numbers, yet highly affordable. Check them out now on the web at cooler.bike, or find them on Instagram with hashtag CoolerKingBike. Cooler.bike. E-bikes that are cool AF.
Welcome back to the United Redcast, where myself, Dan Riley, is joined by Ben Paul and Chris, the Tinkle Man, Curly. You can find out more about that if you Google him. We're going back to continue talking about the Arsenal game. I wasn't surprised at the score. I called it with a few friends of mine, because after a big, after an important defeat, or after a defeat with United, the next game, Ollie always tends to not lose. So I wasn't surprised that it was 0-0. It was one of those games where a defeat would have been bad for us. It would have rocked the confidence. And I think for the reason I predicted the 0-0 is because I thought that Arsenal don't want a defeat at this point. So it almost it was almost inevitable that that was going to be like that. But again, you said there, Chris, you touched upon taking the chances. I think that's probably the difference, isn't it? When it comes to the sides that win a title and the sides that are the nearly men, it's those games where if you don't put those chances away, you're just gonna drift. And I think so. Moving forward, we have a game with Southampton coming up tomorrow. What do you think the attack is going to look like for that one? Because they're a funny team, Southampton. They can pull out a really good performance, and then they can look quite ordinary. So what do you think?
Well, I think Southampton are struggling with injuries at the moment, particularly in midfield. So Hasenhüttl at the weekend said that, you know, we're going to have to make do and maybe play a couple of kids from the start on Tuesday night because of. That's what happened to the squad. For United, I'm thinking that they might just need a bit of a spark, a bit of something different, a bit of something of a challenge. I mean, you know, we've seen Greenwood come in, yes, score great against Liverpool, but be soft against Sheffield United. You know, can Cavani at his age turn around from Saturday to Tuesday to start? Martial's out of form, Rashford's been out of position. You know, does that front line need a bit of difference? Like, I was a little bit surprised even that James or Mata didn't come on to play on the right side, even when it got to later on in the game, or even Van der Beek, get him on the pitch. But is it more than that? Do you need a completely new spark? I mean, this, the punt is Diallo, that Diallo's debut in the under-23s, and we shouldn't get excited, but I did watch it, was class. I mean, he's just levels. He is just levels. He reminded me of Mo Salah, actually, more than anyone else, in terms of his the way he pressed, his composure in front of goal, his all-round ability and his cheekiness. I mean, the penalty Panenka was hilarious, straight down the middle. Took all the headlines off the kid up front, Hugill. But maybe Diallo, maybe it's the kind of game you start Diallo for 60 minutes and say, go on, have a go on the right wing. And it might just inspire the rest of them, because I think they need some inspiration somewhere against the slog of playing these games twice a week, of the same players rotating. Maybe they just need some different kind of spark.
Ben, can you see Diallo coming in? I mean, I'd be surprised, but maybe it's a time to give Dan James a start.
Well, we did live that under-23 games that through Chris's online commentary for all of us. If there is any,
I did ask for it.
I did ask for it, and I wanted it, of course. If there's a positive to draw from this week, it's the performance of that under-23 team. Is it Joe Hugill scoring four goals? He's a mere what, 18-year-old?
17.
Okay. Well, there's, you know, and against Liverpool as well, and the performance of Armadillo, it's one of those things, isn't it? You could throw him in and he could ruin his confidence by being completely overwhelmed, or he could absolutely just take it on the nose. And
I mean, physically might not be quite there yet for proper Premier League men's football. He might, you know, need a couple more weeks to get up to speed with his strength and conditioning type of stuff. I think my point is, it just feels like the team needs a spark. It needs something a bit different to energise them a little bit amongst the workload of all the games they've got. That's my point, really. Maybe Diallo might be it. Maybe a 20-minute cameo off the bench might do it.
No, but I appreciate that. No, absolutely.
I think that's what's missing from that front line at the moment. It's square pegs in round holes. Too many players. Cavani's going to be the centre forward, right, from now to the end of the season. He's going to be first choice as the number nine. Rashford should be left wing because he's the best left winger.
Yeah.
But Ollie wanted a right winger because he had no natural person to play in that position. And at the moment, that's a problem because it puts more pressure. You got a left-footed inverted winger on that side. It puts more pressure on Wan-Bissaka to get up the right and deliver some attacking play. And that's not his strength. So, you know, that's half your, a third of your attacking ability isn't what it, the level that it should be. And I think that's kind of a problem when you're playing all these games, especially so close together. And Southampton always give us a tough game because, you know, they press hard, they chase and they harry. And they've got some quality in the final third with Danny Ings that can take a chance and finish off. And suddenly you could be 1-0 down and you're playing catch up again.
I think in terms of, you know, the tiredness of that, you know, must undoubtedly be creeping in at this stage because of the relentlessness of this season. And of course, you know, the workload doesn't stop. We've got, you know, as we know, we've got Southampton coming up, followed by another league game at the weekend and then another FA Cup game the following Tuesday. So I think I would imagine we're going to see Van de Beek starting in this game, I would have thought. Do you think? And do you think we could maybe would he possibly consider putting Pogba on the left side of an attack? Maybe get Pogba further up the pitch and get him involved in closer to goal where yeah, you know that was the test.
I mean, that was the plan against Arsenal to start the team was to do that. But the problem still arises about compromising Rashford on the right. And he just doesn't look natural there. He doesn't look comfortable there. He looks like he's working it out there. And, you know, that's kind of tough. But, yeah, I'd agree with all that. It's
does Rashford need a break maybe, Chris? Because he has had an injury, hasn't he?
He could. I mean, he could. You know, he came back. He did his knee, didn't he, against Liverpool in the last 10 minutes. And he was a doubt. And then he played terribly against Sheffield United, frankly. And it's like, well, did you really need to start him like that?
Yeah.
You know, so there's those kind of issues. It goes back to that freshness. And Van de Beek definitely deserves a run. He played against Southampton, didn't he, in the home tie, in the first.
I'd see him play a little bit deeper. I don't think he should replace Bruno. I'd like to see him next to Fred or McTominay or Matic.
I agree, because I think he can do it. I think in certain games, against certain teams, where they're kind of possession teams and then I think Van de Beek will keep the ball and move the ball quicker and there's more space. I mean, Sheffield United sat back. You know, one of the things people don't talk about is how slow we were in central midfield last week and at the back between the centre-backs of passing the ball around. There were too many touches and too slow passing. And it makes it really easy to defend against. We've seen that time and time again. And maybe you need to play a little bit more direct sometimes, a little bit quicker. It's going to be a difficult week this week, I feel. I think it's going to be difficult. But it goes back to, you know, 2 weeks ago, you know, we're top of the table feeling really confident. And you're like, well, this is the time the board invests in giving Ollie what he needs to kind of really make a proper title challenge. Liverpool are going to buy two centre-backs today. Granted, last minute, and they've left it. But they're going to do it because they know they need it to challenge for the title.
Mm.
And that's what a proper football club does.
What do you think we will be doing, Chris? There's some loans, isn't there?
I think there's some loans. I think we'll get to say, you know, our fond farewell. I mean, my minibus is busy today, driving to the airport. I've got to say, that's the next thing I do after this. So in going in the minibus, Marcos Rojo is going to finally leave.
Is he?
He's going to finally leave. We're going to rip up his contract and he's going to back to Argentina to play for Boca Juniors. I'll tell you a Marco Rojo story. He went to Tiffany's in Manchester, a jeweller's, and bought some diamond earrings. He liked a pair. They were £4,000, these diamond earrings. He went, I'll have three of them. So he bought three sets, 12 grand. And then when he got home and he looked at the receipt, he read it wrong, and it was 120 grand. Mark will be trying to get those through customs. Jesse Lingard, as we know, is now a happy, it's hammer time for Jesse, down at West Ham. We said goodbye to him on Friday. Looked like Romero. No, I can't get anyone to take him in the minibus, Romero.
That amazes me, really, because he is a really, really good goalkeeper.
I think he's done a fantastic job for us. And I think we've not treated him very well. No. Brandon Williams is going to stay. We're going to keep hold of him. Ollie says he's not going to let him go. He still wants him there. It's probably wise. Wayne Rooney's been on the blower at Derby, and he's going to take our young centre-half, who's been training with the first team, Tedden Mengi, to Derby for the rest of the season.
That'll be good for him, won't it? That'll be a good
experience.
Good club to go to, because it's a they've got a decent team there, and I think also the fact he's going to be playing under Rooney. That's just
well, for Mengi under Rooney, yeah, but Lingard under Moyes will be interesting again. It'll be like
interesting. Usually it's 70-year-old grandmothers who are playing under Rooney, but
that's an old joke. That's like 2004 Rooney. That is. You know.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it wasn't actually Drew. I think there was some dispute there. But
just with the other loans that have gone on. For those that might not know, but some promising players went on loan at the start of the season, and it's not worked out. So Tahiti Chong was at Werder Bremen, I think. That's been terminated, and he's gone to Belgium to Club Bruges. Jimmy Gardner went to Watford. That's been terminated, and he's signed for Nottingham Forest. So he's going to be there the rest of the season. Dylan Levitt, his loan got terminated at Charlton, and he's back in the club. So there might still be a few loans that happen today with Levitt, who will look to get into the Euro squad with Wales in the summer. He might want to play regular football. And there could be a couple of players from that under-23s who did really well. I was really impressed with Ethan Galbraith and Hannibal on Saturday. So, you know, that side of things will be busy in the loan department today, probably.
We've also let Palestri, the guy we signed from Uruguay, to go to Alaves.
Alaves in Spain. And that goes back to my point of the last deadline day when we're all, we signed this young Uruguayan and everyone's frantically watching him on YouTube to go, is he any good? And you go, isn't he just like Dan James? And they give it all the big I am and sell about how, five signings on deadline day, all that we have invested. Well, you haven't. The team isn't the team hasn't improved as much as it should have done from last year, I think.
So what's Phil Jones' news?
Who? Phil Jones? I could basically go down the East Lancs on the minibus and drop him off at Liverpool with pleasure. They could have him for free. They need a centre-half.
Well, wasn't Brucey going to take him?
I think he's still injured.
I think that's the problem. Every deadline day, he picks up an injury.
Here's a frightening thing, though, right? In the summer, Phil Jones would have been there 10 years.
Wow.
I mean, doesn't that age you?
I remember when we signed, I went on holiday with Pat Nevin. Pat Nevin and
that sounds like a pitch for a Channel 5 show. Holidaying with Pat Nevin.
It was me, Pat Nevin, Perry Groves, and Colin Murray. It was actually Colin Murray's stag weekend. And Pat Nevin turns to me and goes, I would have 11 Phil Joneses in my team. He's that good. He's brilliant on both a left back, right back, centre half, holding midfield. He can do anything. He's a brilliant signing.
How many pints was he into that session when he came out with that pearl?
I think I won't be drawn on this, but there were hallucinogenics on the table.
Dear me, did they didn't put the call into Frank McAvenny then, did they, at any point later on in the day? Although I do believe Frank was cleared of all charges. Anyway, moving on to the next weekend, we are facing Everton, an Everton team who got turned over very unexpectedly by Newcastle this weekend. So that could be an interesting one, because again, Everton are going to want to get back on track, and I think we know Everton have a very, very good front three, don't they?
They really do, and that's why they've been a bit inconsistent, but a definite threat. You know, everyone knows I'm a massive fan of Dominic Calvert-Lewin. And I think, you know, he's someone we should consider to join Old Trafford in the future. I think this week is a really big week for United, with Southampton and Everton both being at home. In light of the recent results, City looking strong, Liverpool creeping back into it, Well, City have got to play Spurs and Liverpool in their next two games. So there's a chance they might drop points in those games. You know, Aguero may be back for them. But that's why these two home games this week are massively important in the title race, just to get us back in there and make us all feel like we're back in there. Because I think after the last two results, we don't feel that way. Everton are always competitive at Old Trafford recently. So, you know, the confidence we can gain out of beating Southampton will help us on Saturday.
Yeah. Do you think, Ben, do you think we can get a result against Southampton and sort of get, if you like, get the confidence back on board and then go into that Everton game and looking for, you know, to get a little bit of a 6 points?
I think confidence breeds confidence. If Ollie sees that we didn't lose, and you're right, he probably went out with that team, so he didn't lose against Arsenal. If he's a bit more confident, maybe adds a bit more flair in the central midfield without having to play two holding midfielders. Yeah, of course we can get a result. If we just remember the last few weeks, not just last week, we've got the players, we've got the tactics, we can do whatever we want. I think we can get a victory.
I mean, one of the reasons, weirdly, that might help us be more attacking is if Eric Bailly can come back into the team, particularly in the whole get home games.
Because it means the training again.
Yeah, but I think we can defend higher up the pitch and he can cover with his pace, which means you don't need two screeners in midfield. Mm-hmm. And you can play Van der Beek with a Fred or with a McTominay if he's recovered from his stomach cramps. Maybe that could unlock the attacking prowess within the team in these two big games this week. I think it's a big week for our season, this. Yeah. I really do think it's a big week for our season, because if we can get 6 points, we're kind of back on track, we're moving forward. If we don't, I think psychologically it could just make them, you know, drop their shoulders quite for a substantial time, which will be tough to pick up again.
Yeah, and obviously we've got the, just going forward, we'll talk about it next week, but we've got the cup game to follow. So I think two victories would stand us in good stead for that one. So just going to do a bit of a wrap up. I mean, just in other business, Chelsea seemed to have picked up a bit the last two games, two clean sheets under Thomas Tuchel. Do you think they could sort of be an annoyance for some of our two rivals, City and Liverpool?
Well, they're about 8 points behind us. I think his breakthrough came with, he put Hudson-Odoi and Alonso as wing-backs, and they were a revelation. They've always had the players. I mean, they've just spent $250 million. He speaks German, so he can probably tell Thomas Werner and Kai Havertz to play better in a language that they understand.
It's good, Thomas, yeah. Yeah, good. Goal, Thomas. Goal, Timo. That's my Thomas Tuchel impression.
That's very good.
Manchester ist ein großer Andrestadt, Thomas, in Nordwest England. Gibt es 5,000 Einwohner und viele Fabriken und Kaufhäuser, Timo.
Entschuldigung, wie kommen wir am besten zum Bahnhof, bitte? And on that lesson of German, I think it's time for us to just take a final prediction. Ben Paul, two games, Southampton and Everton.
Against Southampton, we'll win 2-1. Against Everton, we'll win 2-0. And then we'll see what happens after that.
Chris?
A sneaky 2-1. No, I'm going to go a sneaky 2-0 against Southampton, because we'll get them late. And then Everton, a tough 1-0.
Oof,
okay. Bruno penalty, thanks to VAR.
What about you, Dan? What do you think?
I think it's time for me to pull out my usual... I always reach for it when we need him. I'm going to say Cavani is going to bag two braces and we're going to come home with the points.
Should put a bet on that. It's almost the GameStop share tip of the Redcast.
Yeah, there you go, everyone. Get to your local bookies. Cavani, two braces and happy days. So with that, we shall bid you farewell from the United Redcast. Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Chris. Thank you and good night.
This is a Playback Media production. Get all the associated links for this podcast at unitedredcast.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.